So good evening to all. Thank you, BBS, for making this possible. I welcome all those people that are joining in with this call tonight on the internet through BBS. And this is a simulcast, as usual, with a conference call. Every time you hear a ding, that somebody else is joining in.
Hi, it's Wanda.
Wanda, good evening. Welcome to the call.
Thanks.
Thank you for being here. All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name or location.
Yes, hi. Good evening. It's Jane in Philadelphia.
Hi, Jane. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And I noticed that the announcement email came in a few minutes ago. View his email online. Oh, it's a wild card. All right.
Aren't they all?
The mathematics of the universe. Aren't they all, yeah. Yeah. All right.
Hi, everybody. It's Julia from planet Earth.
Julia, I'm so glad to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. I'm very glad to hear your voice. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Julia. Hello,
Julia.
Missed all
Welcome
of you.
Welcome to hey, Earth. We've all been wondering where you were.
Hey, it's Chris in Memphis.
Chris, welcome to the call.
What's up, guys?
I hope you're doing better today. Healing blessings, brother.
Oh, thanks. I was about to get in the tub, so...
All right. Make sure you keep the phone above the water.
Yeah, don't
go No, I'm not going to get in yet.
All right. More people joined in. Welcome, everyone. If you want to, please say your name and location.
This is Steve in West Palm Beach saying hello.
It's Steve. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Right? Mute me. Hi,
I'm doing good. Thank you.
All right.
What'd you say the email said?
Who's this?
What's the email say today?
It's a wild card.
Sounds good.
All right. All right. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
It's Anthony in Florida.
Anthony, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
All right. Thank you for being here, man.
Thank you.
All right. Somebody else joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
No.
Hello, Mr. No.
Oh.
We're going to turn you into a big yes tonight.
Good evening, everyone. Lone Wolf from Sedona.
Lone Wolf, welcome back. How are you?
I'm excellent, bro. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thank you for being here.
My honor.
Well, here we are again tonight with Lone Wolf and Ariel and Uncle Terry, and Wynn has arrived, and I believe that Terry Brown here is as well. Terry, are you with us?
Yeah.
All right. Good evening, Terry. How are you?
Good, thank you.
All right.
Great to hear your voice.
Great to hear your voice as well.
The sky's all pink. The sky's all pink here.
Oh, it was like Memphis, too. It was like that in Memphis. That's weird. When the sun
sets.
Hi, Mr. No.
There?
This is Roger in Austin.
Oh, no, you're on mountain time, right? But, yeah, that's all you said. Yeah. But it was pink, just like you said. It was, you know, we had, like, a lot of storms today and tornadoes and stuff. That was pink.
Wow.
That's
Mama's
weird.
A healing.
Roger in Austin. Roger?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
In four.
You know,
still here.
You know, we have two other... We have two other people come in from Austin, particularly.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Austin people are weird.
Isn't that in that other state called Texas?
Hey, senor.
Well, I think Austin is a very cool town. All right? No, I've never been there.
Big music scene. Good energy.
Food, too. Yeah.
There we go.
Texas is a
great spot right there.
If anybody
another
wants
country,
to buy,
I heard.
If anyone wants to buy Terry and I tickets, we'll go there. Okay.
So where are we going?
I better not speak for Terry, okay? All right.
All right, let's clarify the line over here. We will...
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
All right.
All callers are muted.
All right.
This conference is being recorded.
This is 6:05 p.m., and this is our Monday night call, 10:13-2:14. Now, I don't know if you guys can tell this, but I'm really tired today. I am going to have to mock this up to be interesting, because we had some really extraordinary calls in the last few days. It seems like my energy starts to balance for three calls, Monday, Wednesday, and Sunday. And then we added the Ariel call last Thursday. It was a two-hour call. And I still haven't recovered, although I think Ariel has recovered. Ariel, are you there?
She is here, and let me find her. We are in lecture. Hold on 1 second. I think this is her. Ariel, is this you?
It's me.
All right.
No, I haven't recovered. I'm just pushing through like Wynn told me to do.
You're pushing through.
He said, whenever you fall down, get back up. Didn't you?
But you're feeling awesome, right, Ariel?
I'm not going to complain because I feel so blessed. My tooth is out. I'm just going to move forward and make some beautiful things.
Man.
No sense in complaining. I'm just going to get up and keep going because I love you guys so much.
Ariel, should we take a trip around the world?
Yeah, I think so. Tell everybody peace, love, harmony, and grace. Here we are.
Take the white
boot. Rah-rah.
Onward, Christian soldiers, march, right?
Sing on to love and peace and harmony and grace. Come on, boys, it's a pink. I have the most beautiful pink sunset. I'm so grateful to Elohim.
The sun pink sunset here, it still is right now. It's really
pretty.
It's
so beautiful here.
Okay, well, I hope it's the Elohim. And we have Terry Friedman here. Hi, Terry.
He actually just dropped out. For some reason.
He dropped out, not here anymore? Okay. Hey, I'm gonna share with you guys. Okay.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves. All callers are muted.
We got really a lot of comments from the Ariel Sacagawea call. And you know, it's still there. You can listen to the audio. You can listen to the replay. If you haven't listened to it, you know, it's like, I hope you do. Because, first of all, I don't think it's like any call we've ever done. Because I would recommend you read about Sacagawea. Just do it. You're not going to be able to spell it. S-A-C-A. Saka Jawea, who was this, you probably know by now, but an Indian Native American scout who was on the Lewis and Clark expedition that actually made that expedition successful. Most people say it would not have been successful without that woman on board. And she was on board because she was married to one of the guys who was officially getting paid. And she went on as his wife. But what happened was, as they went through their passage, Sacagawea was able to make safe passage so they didn't get killed by Indians. They were going through a lot of hostile territory. And some people say that if it wasn't for the Lewis and Clark expedition, there never would have been a western half of the United States, because really the United States didn't claim that part of this country at the time. They were just on the east. And the Lewis and Clark expedition laid the groundwork for the entire country to exist. And what did Sacagawea do? First of all, she kept the Indians from killing them. Second of all, she was able to help them navigate through certain weird things. Third of all, she was able to forage for wild food and animals. And when she was young and brought up on her tribe, all the women were taught how to survive, how to hunt, how to make arrowheads. And at some point, we'll put some of Ariel's arrowheads. And this particular lifetime, it's very interesting, because if you had a lifetime like that with Lewis and Clark, it was very exciting. And after that, she was a hero. And I believe Lewis or Clark helped her bring up her baby. And I think she was taken care of for the rest of her life. And there were more statues of Sacagawea than any other woman in American history. And Ariel was born a Native American in this life, and then was adopted and brought up in a Mormon family. But she could not sit still. She ran away from home. She traveled all over. She ended up on tribes. She was accepted by different tribes. She learned their languages. She lived in the woods. She survived on nothing. And she didn't know she was Sacagawea. And she's been, how would I say it? It wasn't all a bed of roses by any means, because she was very taken advantage of, abused. Many things happened, and bad marriage, et cetera, et cetera. But you can hear her voice on the calls. She has probably one of the most infectious, enthusiastic energies of anyone you would ever meet. And you can imagine her. I can imagine her. You know, it'd be a very unique quality of person who could do what Sacagawea did. And I could really imagine Ariel doing it. Aside from the fact that when we asked our sources, I said, was she or wasn't she? They said, yes. But usually, by the time I ask a question like that, my intuitions are fairly well honed. And you saw the pictures of Ariel and Sacagawea. So they look similar. They have similar energies. And this call really helped Ariel. I know it did. It helped her suddenly feel like she had a purpose in this realm, and helps her have more confidence. It helped her realize that she could be in front of a group and talk, and she could pull it off. And because she gets, from knowing her for the last 5 years, she can be very scattered, and she can be very all over the place. And suddenly, she was really focused. And I think more is coming. We will see. But the essence of the call really was not just talking about Sacagawea and Ariel. It touched on many, many, many Native American ideas in a way, but not intellectually. You could feel the energy. You can feel how a Native American functions to a certain degree. And, you know, every culture is different. And this is an inside look on Native Americans. So just go back in one of your emails. You can donate as little as $3. It's going to Ariel. It's going to help her get her act and her life together. And I thank Lone Wolf, George Pierce, who lives in Sedona, who helped hold the energy for that call. And he's on the line. Thank you. Thank you, Lone Wolf. And on that note, should I talk about this? You know, I did. I'm going to do a lot more research in what I'm going to share with you. And I was really holding it for a little later. But since I have put it in my mind, and I'm going to just tell you, this is one of those things where, especially because Terry Friedman's on the line, and this is one of those things which is up for, I'm not saying it's true. I'm not saying it's true. And basically, it was Michael Tellinger who, I didn't read his book. We have his book. Apparently, it's in his book, Slave Species of the Gods. And
Uncle Terry's present, by the way.
Oh, he is present. Okay. You know, Terry. Okay, Terry Friedman.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about something that is so wild, and I think you'll find it extremely interesting and food for thought. You know, there is these calls are really unusual because we don't really have an axe to grind or a belief system that everyone should believe in. In fact, you know, I just tell people don't believe in anything. Don't believe we're talking to the Elohim. Don't believe Terry Friedman was Matthew in his past life. Don't believe there's a rock group. You know, but you have to get your own experiences. And so many people that are attending this call have had some kind of experience. And got an email last week from somebody who was seeing pink clouds in the sky. And I mean, I blow my mind myself. I mean, I'm sitting here watching this, and we have never is it on call. Never can I control it. Never can I say, okay, let me see pink now. But anyone who stays on these calls long enough usually finds some amazing phenomena. I mean, a while back ago, but, you know, the phenomena never repeats itself. So it's not like you can say this is going to happen the next time. Like a couple of years ago, on a Sunday call, Terry was on the call and channeling. Suddenly she started speaking another language and no one knew what she was saying. The next day I got an email from a lady in Turkey and said, she said hello to her, said her name, said hello to her by name, and she was amazed. And so, you know, we're kind of like in this, on this train, except where is it going? What's the scenery going to be like? We have Robin Williams coming in and out. We've had Michael Jackson in the past. It's like, and I don't look for those things. In fact, at the very beginning, I said, I can't let anyone know about this because I'll ruin my credibility. I figured that the actual credibility was resting on the wild ride that takes place on these calls. So, some of you, I did an epic call a few months ago, and it puts together the whole history of this realm in encapsulation, which went from the Elohim creating the realm to coming into the realm, getting captured in it, how the negative got started, how with possessions there was a negative that wanted to control things, and then the Ra group did an intervention through David Wilcock, through Ra Ta, 10,500 B.C., and Ra became a big name in Egypt, and then the negative priests took over the name Ra, called it Amun Ra, and then took control of Egypt, but people thought it was the same Ra group that showed up. If you haven't read all this, go back. I got to organize our archives, but and a couple of people have volunteered to help with that project. I want to get with it because we have calls that are, I don't even know where they are in the archives. But in any case, then Egypt was under the control of the negative, and maybe the same negative that's under control of the negative today, and they're doing sacrifices. They were doing all similar things, and then there was Akhenaten, who somehow, because his wife was channeling, discovered that the whole priesthood was negative, and so he outlawed it, changed his name from Amenhotep, Amun, to Akhenaten, which was distancing him from the priesthood. Akhenaten was involved in creating the Essenes, and the Essenes were involved with Jesus. And one of the things that I talked about, and this has been a mystery for me, it's been a mystery that I keep probing, and I got one possible answer to the mystery, and it kind of blew my mind. I don't know if you guys remember about Enki and Enlil. We had a whole series of rewriting the Old Testament, and there were two brothers who were ETs that were mining gold on this planet, and they bred humans, they genetically engineered humans, to be their slaves. This has been going on for a long time. The most recent episode was 15,000 B.C. And there became a big conflict between the two brothers over how this should work, because in the genetic engineering, one brother did not want the humans. The genetic engineers were hybrids between the Anunnaki, which is what the space group was called, the Anunnaki and them. And, the Anunnaki and the apes, okay? And so then we added a bit of information that the Ra group had moved the souls from Maldek, a whole planet full of souls, to Earth, because that planet had a nuclear explosion, and the souls were a tangled mass. And apparently, there are a lot of indications, cross-references, that was from the Ra material. But what I say now is not in the Ra material. But when I asked the question on our own private sessions, they said it was true. And they moved the souls into the Anunnaki hybrids to help individuate them. And then, so the Ra group had a vested interest in all these souls that were being created. They were trying to evolve them, get them untangled. And so now, this is what happens when I'm slightly tired. I take a moment and I say, where are you, Lynn? Just wait a moment. I'll be back. Now we have all these humans becoming slaves and being, you know, we did a number of calls on the Old Testament. The gods of the Old Testament were actually these Anunnaki ETs who were trying to control the humans they created. And, of course, there were two brothers, Enlil and Enki. Enlil would have just assumed killing all the humans. And he did, like in the Old Testament, Sodom and Gomorrah, which supposedly were God, you know, destroyed this city because it was sinning, was actually Enlil dropping a nuke on it, and another nuke in the Sinai Peninsula. I'm actually repeating information that was in an old call. And here's where, but I'm going to add something really new to it tonight. It has to do with, let's look at Rata, 10,500 BC. It was indicated in Edgar Cayce material that Rata was an ET human hybrid. That's all they said. And as far as I know, the only group that was doing ET human hybrids were the Anunnaki. And that meant that the Anunnaki had something up their sleeve. But historically or in channeling, I've never found this. But somehow the Ra group grabbed the line, and the Ra group made a big effort at changing the template on the planet, because Ra-Ta was doing all these miracles of healing. He was building temples. This is all in the Edgar Cayce material. He built the pyramids by levitation. And through the Ruckert material, it said that the Ra group had made a mistake in this intervention. I mean, according to the Ruckert material, the Ra group actually manifested bodies, not through reincarnation, but through light projection that people could see. And that they kind of helped people and walked among us. And when Ra-Ta died, when he was done, the Ra group, essentially, their contribution was done. But the negative, the people were still worshiping the Ra group, or the Ra, because they did so many positive things for the common man. And the priesthood of Egypt took over the name Ra, and it was probably the Anunnaki priesthood, and they called it Amun-Ra, which might have been an Anunnaki by the name of Marduk. And so for thousands of years, Egypt was under the auspices of the negative. Now, one real signature, if you ever look at it, of a real Ra group intervention and something that's not, is there hierarchy? Is there hierarchy? Is there elitism? If you notice, Jesus, and Terry Friedman has made this very clear, Jesus never created hierarchy. He walked amongst the regular people, the poor people. It didn't matter. And he was working from the ground up. When there's hierarchy, when there's an elite class, when the religion becomes controlled by the hierarchy, it loses its essence. It becomes a belief pattern. And it's very hard to get out of the belief pattern into the experience of divine love. So now I'm going to go to what I'm going to bring up to the present. And it has to do with Jesus. And when I brought this up in this last call, I talked a lot about Jesus and how he was, you know, he he was set up to be a Messiah. And who set Jesus up to be a Messiah? Who set him up? That is what we're going to talk about right now. And this is from Michael Challenger's book, Slave Species of the Gods. So Michael Challenger went deeply into that question, okay? And he brought up this idea, and he made the case. I'm looking at the chapter of the book where he did this, that the whole idea of a Messiah coming in was an Anunnaki idea that came in through the Old Testament. All the prophets who came down from chariots were all space people coming down from chariots. And Jesus was a plan of the Enlil, the negative guy, the negative brother, to further take over and control humans with religious belief and fear of God, okay? And Jesus came in. Let me read a little bit here, okay, about this. Now, the one thing that Michael Challenger does not include is knowledge of the Ra group, because my take on this is that Jesus, once he realized that he was in the seat of being the Messiah, did not let himself be controlled. Had a very high intent. And no one will ever say this but me. The Ra group took over the line. And Jesus manifested the law of one. And he manifested love at a level of all mankind. And the Bible, let me just read this, because I'm not an expert on what he said. I just said, oh my God, this is what I've been looking for, okay? Enlil, this is from this chapter here. Enlil held rank over Enki, which meant he could basically do what he wanted with Enki's human creation. The disagreement between Enki and Enlil, which had started way back in the Garden of Eden, played a cardinal part in all of the scriptures of the Bible, including the prophecies which were made. We explore this in greater detail in other chapters, exposing how Enki was labeled the serpent and devil, and man was forbidden to consort with him. The plan was so superbly imposed on humanity that it will forever hold the top spot in the annals of human manipulation and propaganda. It may take centuries more of religious bloodshed for humans to come to terms with reality. Enki was the good guy, but history is written by the victors, and the real story was masterfully covered up by history books, of which the Bible is the main culprit, because it was controlled by the victorious Enlil, who proclaimed himself God. But as time marches on, and we discover new truths about our ancient prehistory and possible origins, we learn that Enki was the architect of Adam, and he loved his creation. He tried on many occasions to elevate humanity, to teach them, to inform them. But Enlil would not allow the slave species to become a threat to him and their settlement here on Earth. This is the strong underlying message seeping out between the pages of the Bible today. After the longest period of human enslavement and their settlement here on Earth, this is the But Enlil would not allow the slave species to become a threat to him and their settlement on Earth. This is the strong underlying message seeping out between the pages of the Bible today. After the longest period of human enslavement, the real everlasting plot, and it presents some answers to the chasms in our one-sided history books. When I started to read this incredible book, I felt I had stumbled upon the Holy Grail itself. Words cannot describe the feelings of conflict playing with your mind when you start to absorb the content of the ancient clay tablets. He's talking about Zachariah Sitchin, and this whole thing about Enki and Enlil started out when Zachariah Sitchin translated the clay tablets in Sumeria, which was the oldest civilization on our planet. And in those tablets was the story of Enki and Enlil and these space people. And so he says, the content of these ancient clay tablets, and compare them to what we've been told for so many years. The inspiring thing is these tablets have been unearthed, translated, and which you can now read, and are the results of decades worth of work by people like Sitchin and many others. It is truly a surreal experience to read 4,000 and 5,000 year old scriptures in clay. The beauty about these is that you cannot erase words with whitener. You cannot go back and change the odd word. It's very hard to fake it. These tablets reveal things about our human origins and support all the theories I have postulated in this book about our human ancestry. By bringing these facts to life in an uncomplicated fashion, it also supports the horrible theory that we have been manipulated into submission from the very first day of our existence. Ask yourself this question: how many people who study and preach the Bible have ever seen the original biblical documents as they were written in ancient times? The percentage will be minuscule. Here, we have a discovery from the days of Abraham, perfectly preserved in clay, delivering a serious message to humanity while turning on its head everything we have ever been taught. Suddenly, the Lord is the devil, and the devil is our maker. Are we going to believe it or discard it? Since we have dealt with much of the finger-wagging of the Old Testament, let us look at a very few technicalities surrounding the scriptures of the New Testament. The recorded events surrounding the birth of Jesus are highly suspicious. The extremely questionable historic entries have never been able to concur on the time, place, and town in which Jesus was born. Now, you know what? I'm just reading him. I think, in general, I've met him. Terry and I went to lunch with him. In fact, I think Terry Friedman went to a talk by Michael Tellinger, as I believe. And Michael Tellinger is very astute. I don't know how he's footnoted all of this, but let me go on reading, because Terry Friedman, I think, is probably still on the line, probably all ears, okay? And even the date of his birth differs from publication to publication. It has been penned from 1 BC to 7 BC, and the presentations by historians and theologians seem to constantly clash. The fascinating thing about this subject is that when you speak about Jesus, son of Joseph and Mary, you deal in historic realms which have a host of vigilant custodians. But the moment you say, Jesus, the Son of God, you enter the world of religious dogma, which has a host of rather militant custodians of its own. But it seems that Jesus was not the only covert victim, in this covert human mismanagement. Equally convincing evidence shows the prophet Muhammad and even the Buddha were also misused by the devious Enlil to enslave humanity through religious fear. I kid you not, this is too much to handle for the strongest of character, so I suggest you put aside every ounce of everything you have ever believed in and prepare to digest some liberating facts. Many people have the image, let me just see where he goes into this now. Basically, I want to make sure I have time to make the point here. And he goes on and talks a lot. As I see it, one possible scenario, it's very interesting to talk about this with Terry Friedman, because perhaps he will go in and get some of his own clarification from his own point of view, because I'm relatively sure Terry Friedman was the prophet, was Matthew, who wrote the book of Matthew in the Old Testament. And Jesus came to him and said, let's just say a voice that said it was Jesus came to Terry and said, I need you to write this book to clarify what actually happened. And in that book, and from what Terry has said, Jesus always said, don't tell people I'm the Messiah. Now, what does it mean to be this Messiah? Well, basically, there had been propaganda in the Old Testament. There had been prophecies in the Old Testament. There was a God, idea of God created in the Old Testament that was the God of fear. Do this or you're going to be in trouble. Don't do this and you're going to go to hell. Do this, do that. And there was an attempt to totally control the humans. And doesn't sound like our sources, okay? It does not sound like our sources. It sounds like, there were more than one God, and they would war with each other. Like there was Yahweh, there was Jehovah. And one of the chief ones was Enlil and Enki. And Enlil was the militant one who, Michael Challenger said, ended up having control. And so there was the idea of creating a Messiah by Enki who could further enhance, not Enki, Enlil, take it back, Enlil, who could further enhance his control of the people. And so there were all these predictions made and indications of how that Messiah would come forth. And that Jesus was that Messiah. And this was not necessarily, you know, how can I say it? The whole idea of God as it's projected in our culture. And please excuse me if you don't get mad at me. Be open-minded because so many of us have used that image of the supreme being, of a guy sitting there in the clouds, you know, that can do anything, that's there to help us. And we have gotten a whole different story about how this realm works in our conversations with the Elohim. And they have bent over backwards to say, we're not God. We can work with you. We can energetically connect with you. We can love. We can send you love from higher realms. Sometimes there's miracles that happen around us because we can rearrange reality. But they are no more God than you or I. They are bigger parts of all that is than we are. And we are small parts of all that is who are... What is that noise in the background? Is that... who are... Just a moment. Who are learning how to be bigger parts. Guys, I think that's you making noise. Mute your phone, or else I will.
I just can't wait to request to open Uncle Terry's line.
Right. You can't wait. I just muted you. You know, this is a huge topic, because the one thing Michael Tellinger doesn't say, I mean, you have this guy that's Jesus that comes in and is trained to be the Messiah. And then he goes to India, supposedly, and gets all this training in India. How did he get to India? How did he get to India? Did he take a boat? Or did he take a flying saucer? And then he went, according to the Mormons, Jesus came to America and showed up amongst the Indians. And how did he get to America? Did he come before Christopher Columbus? Or did he fly? And when Jesus was born, he had a virgin birth. And now, I don't know where Michael Tellinger gets his backup for this, but if you recall, Ra-Ta had a hybrid birth, a test tube insemination, okay? And and he was a representative of the Ra group. Now, who gave him... He was probably an Anunnaki who now opened up his higher chakras and the Ra group took over the line. Just like the negative can take over the line. So, what, you know, Michael Tellinger likes Jesus because the words of Jesus do not represent the words, what Enlil would have preferred him to say, okay? Jesus was a man of the people. He was the man of the repressed, the enslaved. And he was trying to release them. And his words are representative of the law of one. Of all people being one. We're all part of each other. Love your neighbor as yourself when two or more are gathered. And when you look at how he died, when you look at some of the rituals, look at the rituals of the idea of the sacrifice. You see, he was probably under a lot of control. Maybe not, okay? I don't think I'm going to talk to Terry Friedman about this. I don't want to put him on the spot, okay? Excuse me, guys. You know, I'm going to read this some more, and I'll read it with Terry, and let's see what we come up with over time. Because, you know, the fact that Terry was Matthew, the fact that Jesus is connecting to Terry, doesn't take away anything from this. And, in fact, you know, some of the stuff Terry has said, Jesus said, don't tell them I'm the Messiah. He just wanted to be an ordinary guy walking around. The whole the thing here is the whole Messiah. The idea here is the whole Messiah idea was something that was projected and created by the negative Anunnaki, okay? And then my take, Michael Challenger doesn't take this, but he does honor Jesus, you know, what he actually did. Then my take is Jesus came in and said, I don't want to be controlled by that. And the virgin birth had to do with Anunnaki hybrid. It's a very interesting thing here. There are many theories and explanations regarding the virgin birth. Regardless of what your personal beliefs are, it was supposed to be the Holy Ghost who came upon Mary, therefore making the child holy, because the child was not conceived in lust. Whatever happened to Mary will forever remain a mystery. But there were a lot of angels milling around during those times, and we have a sneaky suspicion that some of those angels were Enlil and his henchmen. If Enlil was delivering the final stroke to his masterful control over humanity, he would have wanted to ensure some form of genetic supremacy for his fabricated Messiah. This would have included artificial insemination of the young virgin for the purpose of giving young Jesus a distinct genetic advantage. Such a simple procedure would have undoubtedly given Jesus abilities which other humans did not possess. His life of miracles and healing attest to that. We must also keep in mind that the whole idea of sex, whether for fun or procreation, was pronounced to be a sinful act. This is why all humans are said to be born in sin. This was another very good example of how God, quotes, wanted to control the procreation of the slave species. Barbara Thiering writes extensively about this. According to Thiering, when Joseph returned from Bethlehem to collect his young wife Mary, he found her pregnant. He was obviously confused and somewhat alarmed because believing that Mary had become a whore. Before he could desert her, an angel appeared to him explaining that Mary was still a virgin. It must have been a very convincing angel because Joseph stayed with Mary in Galilee until her 9th month of pregnancy, at which point they departed for Joseph's home in Bethlehem where Mary would have the child. But the couple did not make it all the way home because Mary went into labor on the outskirts of the town. The only shelter they could find was a cave in which Jesus was born. The Apocrypha Book of Infancy describes it as such. And when they came to the cave, Mary confessed to Joseph that her time of giving birth had come and she could not go on to the city. Now, let me go on here. Now we have the three wise men, okay? He's going to make the case here that the three wise men were part of Enlil's gang, okay? God, I am sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have done this today and kept it to myself, because this is one of those things that is so provocative. But, you know, it's my take. I've convinced myself. I'm not convinced all this is true. I'm bringing it up, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of emails, and it's controversial. But I am fairly convinced that the God of the Old Testament was the Anunnakis competing with each other. Why do they have so many names for God? Why isn't there just one name? There's Elohim. There is Yahweh. There is Jehovah. There's Adonai, okay? Why so many names? And why were they jealous? And why were they controlling? And why are they telling everybody, if you worship somebody else, you get punished? It doesn't sound like our sources. So if we got all these gods in the Old Testament, and they were Anunnaki competing with each other, and they were, I was trying to figure out where the prophecies came from. And, you know, I haven't done that as a study. and I should, to be really precise on this. But the thing is, I know Michael Tellinger, who wrote this. He's very highly intended. I trust his intent. I don't believe he would write something like this without doing his own research and coming up with stuff, although I haven't studied it, okay? That's the only reason I'm reading this. If it came from someone else other than Michael Tellinger, I'd give it a lot more thought before I'd bring it out. Let's see. When they had gone, and when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared. Oops, it's an angel in a dream. Get up and take the child and mother and escape to Egypt. Well, okay, we're not going to have any more time. But basically, what Michael Tellinger says, what he says is that Jesus actually was revived and survived the had his resurrection. Now, was he brought to, Terry has witnessed the miracles of Jesus or remembers it, okay? And so there's a lot to explore here about what's up and what's down, because Jesus actually, in fact, could have done those miracles, or the Ra group could have helped with those miracles. When I asked, when Jesus said, Father, who answered, they said, the Ra group. This is through DK. And so what I get is that one possible explanation is that Jesus was, in fact, created, the whole idea of the Messiah was created by the Anunnaki to create a figurehead that could control people more and that they would be believing in. And Jesus came in under that figurehead and then took the reins, and he had a high intention, and the Ra group said, let's use this situation. And Jesus presented the law of one instead of a bunch of fear and control. And then after he left this realm, they jumped on it again, and they said, okay, it doesn't matter what he said. We'll turn it around, and we'll make it control. And there you have the church and religion. And there's a lot more about this. We got to go at 6:58. I'm sure Terry Friedman and I will be having a discussion about this, and we'll see how close we're coming to what the real truth is. And this is my wild card show. We were going to do another session from last week, but Terry was tired. She's going to the dentist tomorrow, so she said she didn't want to do it. So we'll be doing that soon. And thank you all so much for being here and letting me be so controversial. I'm going to turn the open the mic.
All callers are unmuted.
Happy Thanksgiving.